This is the Formation Lab.
Welcome one, welcome all to the Traveling Road Show that has no home because it's here on the Formation Lap. I am your one of your hosts, Tim Martin, and I am joined as always by my partner in crime, Luke. Luke, how are you this week?
Ooh, we threw you guys a curveball today. Tim does the intro and you're thinking, oh, okay, we got a guest. Nope. I'm the guest, you punk.
That's right. It is not super producer Dylan. No, he is very happy in his new house, doing all kinds of new updating and projects and texting us all about it. So he cannot be bothered with us urchins. So it is just us to bring you everything about motorsport and things that we enjoy.
And you know what? It is an off week, but that being said, that doesn't mean that it's an off week. You know what I'm saying? There's not a big race going on this weekend, but good Lord, there's enough drama to fill a horse. I got to say, I first off, I do have a little bit of beef with Dylan. I mean, he's, you know, fixing up an antique house that's absolutely gorgeous. And I'm scraping snow off of my car. So, I mean, really, who's battling more here?
I don't think you're battling. I think you're winning because, let's be honest, no snow means no bugs and fun is on the way. So, whereas work is just work.
You should see the reactions of I'll be in Dallas this weekend to call a race down in Dallas. I know, frustratingly close to Austin, Texas, but no cigar right now. Maybe next year. I'll be down in Dallas. You should see the looks on their faces when I tell them. They're like, oh man, like how are things up in Minnesota? It's great. Snowboarding season started yesterday.
It's coming. It's coming, ladies and gents.
Mid-October.
It starts in mid-October, doesn't end until about May.
Yeah, I mean, it's the exact opposite of a good Formula One schedule. Speaking of Formula One.
Yes, let's talk about all things Formula One, IndyCar, and good racing.
Let's be honest, anything after October in Formula One is pretty useless. We don't want, I mean, do you really want to see another Abu Dhabi GP? Not really. Let's talk about Singapore, because Singapore has a new layout, kind of, sort of, maybe just a little bit. They're altering the layout of the Singapore GP. Tim, basically, you know, in sector three, they go through this little right, left, and then left, right pair of chicanes that goes in front of the float at Marina Bay and then under the stands. They're just going to make that one big straightaway. Now, turns 16 and 19 through 19 will just be realigned into a straight that should hopefully increase the passing a little bit, at least at the very least, it adds another DRS zone, I would think. I don't mind this. Keep in mind that, oh man, now it's not going under the float. The float's getting demolished. The building that it goes through, the stands that it goes through, that's being yeeted into the sun to build some new ostentatious, giant, impressive structure that Singapore knows how to build. Tim, I don't mind this slight change in layout. I think, honestly, I like that feature, but the track does need something done to it. It just tweaks.
And we had said, what were those turns again?
16 through 19 to be
16 through 19.
Yeah.
And just for historical reference, this is the section. If it looks familiar to anyone, this is the section where Nelson Piquet Jr. did have his crash during Renault's crash gate that gave Fernando Alonso the advantage improperly because he crashed intentionally. So that section is forever gone. And I'm okay with it. Honestly, you give Singapore a little bit more speed with another straightaway. It takes out some of the fussiness and some of the sections where shenanigans can occur. Yeah, I'm good with it. I've not made any bones about it. I'm a big fan of the Singapore track. I'm a big fan of the Singapore fans. I think that they deserve having a straightaway instead of a double chicane section that only lends to controversy.
Yeah. I will say too, that creates a new straightaway. It's just under 400 meters, as is my understanding. But also, you have to keep in mind too that this takes about 20 seconds of the lap out, by the way. And it is a 400 meter straight, right? But when you come on down, I think that's Raffles Avenue. There's a kink in the middle of that, right? 400 meters down to where the corner is if I'm eyeballing it, it's about 2,400 feet when you include the kink in a Baku-esque fashion, which I would think is a flat out thing. So 2,400 feet is that's not a bad little straight, honestly.
That's not a bad little straight. I'll take
Let's see, that's 731 meters.
Yeah, I'd say you know, 7 football fields, that's enough to get something going.
God bless America. But it's not badly. I love the Singapore track. I don't know if I like unabashedly love it, but I really do like the Singapore track because not every track has to be a banger in terms of constant overtakes. That being said, there are a few tracks where there's, you know, decent enough constant overtakes, but it's a visually great circuit. It feels like a Formula One kind of track with all the lights, the glitz, the glamour. There's a lot of street circuits in its ilk, but there's not any track like Singapore specifically. So
absolutely not. I completely agree. It's a great track. It's a great event every time they go. It's hot as can be at all times,
which is kind of unique on the F1 calendar, by the way. It is actually hot.
It's the humidity.
By European standards. Yes.
Right. Not hot by European standards, not hot by American standards. It is sweltering heat, which we here in Missouri have gotten used to, so we can relate to it a little bit more, but it is very wet heat. The humidity and the intensity are so very high that the drivers go through things that they don't go through normally. So you hear things and see things like Pierre Gasly taking an ice bath in a trash can because that's all they can find. But it is deeply impressive. And the track itself is a lot of fun, having been retrofitted into a city center, you know, one of the first of its kind in a modern day sense, to take the modern car, or at least a version of the modern car. And I think it's a fabulous, fabulous course. And I'm always kind of glad to see updates made to it. I was never really a fan of the Singapore sling section that they had first. That was a series of left, right, lefts.
I admired that they tried something with it, to be honest, but.
It is admirable that they gave it the old college try, but I don't think, this is a bad modification at all.
No. So we are, it's not the only thing that is done, but I feel like we needed to lead off with that because I don't hate the idea of a new layout for Singapore. And Singapore is kind of almost entirely a true street circuit because it is, I mean, basically the front stretch turns 1, 2, and 3 are custom built. Everything else really is as compared to Miami, which has the back straight is public road or semi-public road. And everything else is privately built. Jeddah is a privately built circuit. It's a custom built circuit with close walls, and they call that a street circuit. You can't drive on it. Singapore is unique in the modern street circuit game in that it really is public roads. Even Australia is park roads, which isn't quite the same, you know? So what else we got? Nick DeVries is going on over to AlphaTauri.
Nick DeVries heading over to AlphaTauri to be paired alongside Yuki Tsunoda for 2023 as Pierre Gasly finds his way over to Alpine to be a super French team. Honestly, I hope that he and Esteban Ocon can get on. I know that they haven't in the past. I hope that gets sorted out because I feel like a truly nationalistic team is kind of fun. I feel like I'm excited to see some national pride. Really excited to see them go to France next year because they will be the only thing about the French Grand Prix that is fun.
The French GP, neither Gasly or Ocon's family will be there because you're talking about a super French team. There's some beef between those two families. They don't like each other too much. So they've been banned from attending the same races.
Yep, they have. And I feel badly for them. But like I said, hope they can bury the hatchet. Hope things can get patched up, but we will see. But yes, Nick DeVries has joined the Formula One grid officially. He and Yuki Tsunoda will come together to make the shortest driver lineup on the grid. They are both incredibly short, which I think will be a weight savings overall, or they'll be a little bit pudgier to keep up with their taller brethren. But I am excited to see them. I think Nick DeVries will show a lot of fight, especially given his late start in age as compared to most drivers who get involved in Formula One. I'm excited to see what he throws out there and what caution he throws to the wind. Franz Tost is a phenomenal team manager, and I'm sure he'll do something impressive with Nick DeVries. But Nick DeVries is no longer a part of the Mercedes program.
Umbrella.
He is now firmly in the Red Bull camp. So that is an interesting switch from Alex Albon to the Mercedes camp and Nick DeVries to the Red Bull camp.
But who do you think is going to come out on top on this, by the way, in Nick terms DeVries. of Nick DeVries against versus Alex Albon. I think DeVries is a better driver.
Nick DeVries against Yuki Tsunoda. Yuki Tsunoda is just too angry.
Yeah.
You know, his temper has not been curtailed.
I haven't been impressed by Yuki, to be quite honest with you, which is a bummer because I got a thing for Japanese drivers, man.
they're cool. They're fun.
I'm never
like
going to argue
Japanese
that
fans.
Takuma Sato was the best driver in any, of the major series he was in. But I will argue that on his day, he was darn near the most fun driver.
I would agree. I would definitely agree. But
I was hoping that Yuki would channel his Takuma, if you will. But, hey, here's the deal, too, is drivers can develop sometimes. And that takes
time.
It takes time to develop. It takes time to adapt to a new series. You can't just evenly look at 100 drivers and be like, yep, all of you should be up to speed in 3 races, because that's not realistic. Humans vary. And it does. It takes time to drive a new style of car, like, say, switching from Formula 2 to Formula 1 or from Formula 1 to IndyCar. Because IndyCar
has had some modifications of late.
They've got a new driver.
Chip Ganassi Racing specifically has a new driver. One, Nicholas Gotifi.
The goat.
The
goat.
The Canadian crusher. The crusher of, well... That's a bad way to phrase it. But the
crusher of front wings, his own front wings. Is that what
crusher of front wings and all things hopeful is coming to Chip Ganassi Racing, because apparently Chip Ganassi doesn't have enough pain in his life. So why not add Nicholas Latifi to it? I'm sure he'll come with a little bit of money. So that's always kind of nice. But we will see. I am kind of excited to see if Latifi can kind of put something together in the American series and IndyCar series with Chip Ganassi. I think Chip Ganassi is really good at bringing out hidden talent within drivers. So we shall see what happens with one Nicholas Latifi. I might be wrong, correct me if I am, but I didn't see any modifications to his schedule. It does sound like he'll be a full-time drive.
He will be a full-time drive, I believe. And here's where things get interesting. I don't envy the situation Nicholas Latifi is going to be put in here. To be quite honest with you, I think he's a very physical Formula One driver. I would say he's maybe the most physical driver on the grid in Formula One right now, just in terms of his muscle and how he handles the car. So I do think that will serve him well in IndyCar. The problem is you just went to Chip Ganassi Racing, where expectations are sky high, right? You're in a big four now team, right? Maybe big three if you count Andretti is still one of the big teams. Scott Dixon.
Exactly.
Right? Scott and Dixon. Marcus Ericsson and Alex Palou.
Yep. Alex Palou for now.
I'm on the list of confirmed drivers, and it just keeps scrolling me back up to Arrow McLaren. It's not Pato O'Ward, dang it. Anyway, Scott Dixon is confirmed. Marcus Ericsson will be back. And Palou, I believe, will officially be back to Chip Ganassi Racing. Unless something shocking happens, I believe it's basically set right now. Yeah, Chip Ganassi confirmed on Crash.net. Scott Dixon, Alex Palou, Marcus Ericsson, and at this point, a TBA fourth car that's Nicholas Latifi. I don't envy him because, look, when you swap over to IndyCar, Tim, it happens time and time again. How many former F1 and F2 drivers come over to IndyCar, and universally they say that IndyCar is a harder car to drive?
A lot. Marcus Ericsson said that it's harder. Romain Grosjean said it's a completely different challenge. It's much more... than the precision of Formula One, very, very small details. IndyCar much more elbows out. It's just a different breed of racing.
So it's going to take a while for him to adjust not saying that he's not a talented driver, but I mean, clearly he wasn't up to Formula One standards, but it's going to take some time for him to adjust.
I agree.
You're going to get your ass kicked up and down by Scott Dixon and Alex Palou.
Oh yeah. Well, again, if Alex Palou shows up, but I do agree. I don't, uh, I don't, I do want to afford him the ability to do well, though, and, you know, leave the door open just in case he does, because he might, you know, it might end up where, you know, having a little bit more upper body strength, having a little bit more, you know, control over the car and the setup and being on more even terms, he turns out to be a very good driver. So, you know, I want to afford him that latitude to be able to come in, you know, guns blazing.
Well, I was going to ask you for a hot take, but I'll give it. But I'm going to ask you the question first.
Hit me.
How many times is Nicholas Latifi the lead car for Chip Ganassi Racing? Not leading the race, but the lead car for Chip Ganassi Racing, not counting odd pit cycles. Right? So, like, oh, you led for one lap. Well, he hadn't pit yet.
I'd say under 10.
I would say under like 3. I think he maybe gets one. And that's no disrespect to Nicholas Latifi. I just think it's
a damn hard sport.
How often does Scott Dixon and Alex Palou have an off day?
Well, Scott Dixon had a few more of those this year. Yeah. And Alex Palou is being tested in a much more mental way, with his controversies, with his employer. And I think that, you know, that does weigh heavily on people. And I think that it'll be interesting to see a man his young age, how he deals with that going into a new season with the same team. So I don't know mentally if he'll be buried or not, but I think, you know, the odds are better than even that he is. And I think Scott Dixon, father time comes for us all. Scott Dixon has mostly proven that rule by being the exception. That being said, the consistency was a little bit hit or miss last year. So, you know, let's see. He might be, I think it's under 10. I don't know if it's a pit cycle thing as much as a dumb luck thing. Because I do believe that Latifi had some beginner's luck at the beginning and of his Formula One career. So
I, with no disrespect to Marcus Ericsson, even Marcus Ericsson has lucked his way into a couple wins in IndyCar.
Oh yeah. he lucked into that position at the 500 for sure. Yeah.
He took advantage of it. He took advantage of it to
finish first. First, he had finished, but you know, I don't think, I just don't know how it'll go next year with Latifi. I do wish him well. I hope it goes solidly for him, and I think he has the opportunity to do so, especially in a Chip Ganassi car. I mean, that's the tool to use.
And just to hedge my bets too, you said Father Time comes for us all. I said that about Scott Dixon in 2016, and then he went on and won two more championships. So, you know, who knows? He is Scott Dixon.
So that he did
just finish third in the championship this year.
So Scott Dixon wins 2023 confirmed.
I think so.
Did you hear it here first?
You did hear it here first.
Okay. We're going to have to tag this, for a look back October of 2022.
I do like how IndyCar is getting a bunch of F1 talents. I'm just a little disappointed that it's not Daniel Ricciardo, and I'm gonna swap topics a little bit here, because I think Daniel Ricciardo would be good in IndyCar. I don't know about a title contender. I think he'd be up in the top five at least, but Daniel Ricciardo seems to think that he's gonna magically get a phone call going into the 2024 season that is just not going to happen. If I'm sounding a little mean, Daniel Ricciardo apparently has an open offer to drive from Gunter Steiner to Haas. He could drive at Williams if he wanted to, but he wants a top seat where he could win. And Tim, I don't think he's going to get that call. I think he's a little, I don't want to say delusional, but I don't think he's adjusted to how he looked at McLaren.
I would agree. I think he's doing, but the thing is, you also have to consider his position. Mm-hmm. Have things gone well at McLaren? Absolutely not. You know, by no stretch has he been impressive. The only reason that he won, you know, Monza last year was because McLaren told Lando to hold station. And that was it. So, you know, you're right. At this point, it's marketing. He is marketing himself as someone who's going to go and get himself put back together. And anybody that wants to talk about a drive, please call him. He has proven himself to be a top tier driver at times. So talking about going and getting your head right and making sure you're good, that might sound the best to a future potential employer. So he's leaving it open. I wonder what he's saying behind closed doors, or what the actual situation is. Because yeah, I mean, from the outside looking in, the contracts that are currently in place, it does look grim. But you know, also bear in mind, Daniel Ricciardo's contract was for next year as well. So if we were all sitting here last year thinking that this would be it for Daniel Ricciardo, we probably would have told you were nuts. Yeah. So anything can happen between now and then. So do I wish him well? Absolutely. I hope he comes back. I think he's a really great character and a good ambassador for the sport. I just think that he met his match and he got Sebastian Vettel'd by a younger, better driver at a better team. So, you know, it just is what it is. Do I hope he reaches out and goes, maybe reconsiders IndyCar? Odds are this time next year, we'll be saying that he has joined IndyCar with Andretti, with Penske, or something like that. Or we'll be talking about him joining NASCAR. But I agree with you. I don't think it'll be Formula One. I think it's a 60-40 chance that it'll be somewhere else. 40% just in case something happens like Lewis Hamilton retires.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing, too.
Equally likely.
If Lewis Hamilton retires, what are the odds that that is the call that Toto Wolff makes? You have to weigh that, too. You know?
Yeah, you absolutely do. So it could be to Fernando Alonso. You never know.
Toto Wolff, if in that Lewis Hamilton seat, could basically take his pick of the litter.
Oh, yeah.
Of non-Max Verstappen drivers, honestly.
Verstappen, because Max Verstappen did drop a hint that he might consider early retirement. But oh, then again, man, it's just probably just Max trying to negotiate his deal because that's what Yas would do.
That's exactly what Lewis does. Let's not act like he doesn't do that all the time.
Oh, yeah.
I'm gonna send a second curveball here, and then we'll get back on to our next topic here. Just came across the news wire. Circuit of the Americas has named Turn 20 after Mario Andretti. They call it the Andretti now. Turn 20 is the last turn, so that left-hander onto the front straight. So, I mean, I like it. Turn 1 is Big Red, if I'm not mistaken, and then Turn 20 is the Andretti. More named corners.
I was going to say, I think the naming the corners thing is cool for, like, Monaco or Silverstone or Spa, like the historic tracks. The new tracks, we were talking about you not being on the calendar this year last year, guys. So, I mean, slow your roll. You know, no one's going to think, oh, that's the Andretti corner because Mario Andretti has never raced this circuit. It would make sense if, like, I don't know, Turn 4 at the Indy 500 was named after Andretti because race that plenty. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't know about that.
Yeah, no, I don't know. I like non-dumb corner names, right? I think it adds a little more personality, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
And here's the thing too, is all those names that you hear in Monaco were goofy at one point, you know?
Oh yeah.
To me. And I don't know. By the way, you know, Turn 4 at the Indy 500 should be J.R. Hildebrand. It should be Hildebrand Corner. poor guy.
Yeah. I can't add anything to that. So,
all right, back on topic here. Not on topic, but to our next topic that we actually have on the rundown here. Tim, you wanted to say some words about Red Bull's overages.
We had talked last week or 2 weeks ago intensely, passionately, I would say, about the controversy with Red Bull and how it should be held accountable by the FIA. I heard a really interesting breakdown by therace.com, the-race.com.
Great site.
I read an article and they said that it is now going to be Red Bull's accountants that are going to challenge the FIA's findings and give their interpretation of the rules. And I thought, how wildly interesting is that? That it's not down to the driver. It's not down to the engineer. It's not down to the mechanics finding any, you know, tomfoolery in the the engineering specs or anything like that. No, no. We found accounting loopholes. So now accountants are the competitive edge for Formula One. And if that isn't just all encompassing for everybody, I just don't know what is.
That's Formula One in a nutshell, baby.
It is.
I do want to, I've seen some people on Twitter, which I mean, Twitter is the hotbed for great Formula One takes, you know, say that, you know, maybe you should do a harsh penalty on Red Bull in terms of their constructor champions points, because you wouldn't want to change Max Verstappen's championship win. And let's remove all of our feelings about Max Verstappen and Abu Dhabi and 2021 out of this, because I fundamentally disagree that you can't change that or you don't want to change that. Because you're saying, I wouldn't be right if you went back and did that, is exactly what would benefit a team most. Let's pretend Lewis Hamilton does this so we don't sound like Max haters. Mercedes does not care if they are first or fifth in the Constructors' Championship, Tim, because the sponsorship dollars that come from having Lewis Hamilton world champion outweigh every constructor point that you could get. I mean, to an extent, right?
Yeah.
Little smaller teams, they very much do care, right? But for Haas, the difference between eighth and ninth is a big deal for them. The difference for Alpine between fifth and sixth is a big deal for them, right? But once you get to the top area, like Ferrari, like Red Bull, like Mercedes, once you're in the big three, that's where the money is the world championship. And you saw Red Bull with it too. Red Bull did not care last year about World Constructors Championship. So if you take points off of that, whoop-de-doo. I mean, that was the ultimate prize.
Yeah, I was going to say it's going to be, if you do the world championship, like constructors points, you're going to see violations all day long. You'll see him triple and quadruple next year. I agree with Zach Brown. Zach Brown came out with a fiery take saying that it was tantamount to cheating and that it should be held really and that either disqualified or completely reduced the driver's championship points. And I think there is a lot of credence to that. It's not only that you violated the letter of the rule, you violated the spirit of the rule. The spirit is to make more fair competition, and you just rigged the game to say, oh no, we're going to spend $5 million more dollars. That's a significant amount of money. As even we said last,
technically a minor overspend, but that's just per the like actual name of the ruling.
Right. You can have an entire staff of engineers for that money.
I think if you take out the engine, the cost to assemble an F1 car is just south, like under $1 million, right?
So yeah, it's that.
So even if it's two million, you can build two new chassis from the ground up and just stick a new engine in there.
You could. Now, the article I read did point out that we don't know where the revenue is coming from. There hasn't been a whole lot of transparency about where the overage was.
Red Bull claims it's catering, but
That's what they claim.
Are they a reliable narrator? Like, just ask yourself that.
Yeah.
Ask yourself if Ferrari or Mercedes are reliable narrators.
No. But, you know, it's interesting because you look at the overspend and you start thinking, well, Red Bull sells a lot of parts. Red Bull buys a lot of parts. You know, they have a sister team that they sell to in AlphaTauri. Where was the accounting jujitsu? And, you know, was it from the income from those? Did they qualify the income differently? Did they qualify the outflowing money differently? I'm really curious to see where it does end up. And if they say, oh, it's just catering, well, what, you went over $5 million in catering?
Let's really? Pretend for a second it is catering. That is an employee benefit that you can then use to attract top higher end talent,
right?
Which is a competitive advantage anyway.
Right. So it's an inducement. I think it's a ridiculous argument that they're making, and I'm hopeful that MBS does the right thing and penalizes the way that everyone agrees that they should, but I don't think that they will. I don't think that they have the appetite. Red Bull will pull a Ferrari and threaten to leave and it'll all be for naught.
This to me, and I'm trying not to sound sensationalist, might be the most important decision F1 has had in like a decade plus. Because you want to talk about pink Mercedes. Oh, Team Cox spy. Yeah, we know that. Like, we know we've had that before. We've had that. And honestly, if you come down on a team for spying, you know, loosely, well, it was always going to happen again, right? Last year, the 2021 end of the season, right? That decided a championship. But at the end of the day, it decided one championship. This, how harshly you're going to enforce cap rules is going to dictate how this entire era of Formula One is going to go. Right.
Absolutely. It's tough to understate the importance of this decision. It is a clear flux point. It's a clear demonstration of your commitment to the things that you espouse to be for.
Yes.
So I'm curious to see how you enforce it.
I'm also I want to point out two other things. One, I love the Toto Wolff quote who said, if the penalty is a fine, Mercedes and Daimler are willing to spend however much it means and pay the fine to reclaim our spot near the top of the next year's.
Which is exactly what we said they were going to do.
That's exactly. And to be honest, that is the financially correct move.
Oh, yeah. 150%. Like I said last week, it's the cost of doing business.
Yeah.
Like, that's just it. So I hope they get through there. But yeah, it's a battle of accountants. So we'll see who's got the better financing department.
It is. It's a battle of accountants. That was the other thing too. You mentioned Zach Brown's quote earlier about tying him out to cheating. Zach Brown pointed out, Tim, we had a dry run of this in 2020 where Zach Brown was like, yeah, we asked the FIA about a dozen times on 100 different objects. Is this exempt? Well, how does this count? How would we classify this? You did a dry run in 2020 to learn for an entire year what is or is not exempt or counted this way or that way. And then 9 other teams got it right. I don't buy that this is a rules interpretation issue.
Right. And two got it wrong. One got it super wrong. And there's claiming that it's a difference of interpretation. Well, if it's a difference of interpretation, then, you know.
How did everyone else get it right? And also had a year to ask.
Well,
where everyone else probably asked that at some point too.
Or it's one of those things where if that rule doesn't matter, no rule matters.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like either something or nothing.
What we're watching here is the F1 equivalent of it's better to apologize than to ask permission.
Ask forgiveness over permission.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think for me, I think it's an interesting flex point, especially like in the greater scheme of the world right now, because there is a debate as to whether or not rules and law matter. You know, if it's just you pay a fine there, if there really is no consequence, there are many, many people out there who are flouting the rules, whether it be on the global stage with Russia or whether it be on the national stage with our politics and people doing things that
we're not the only sport with this.
This is a global issue. You know, and it's, you know, what's the fine for a pitcher going out in the Major League Baseball and cheating? You know, what is the overarching consequence for you know, systemic cheating, like it was with the Astros? Did they take away the championship? No. Did they neuter their ability to compete? Well, not really.
No.
For a year or two, you know. So it's like, does anything have teeth? Does anything really matter? Maybe. Maybe not.
You have.
Who knows?
You have to be what? Hard on this.
Exactly. Here. I got it. I got our episode title. Current debate: was Nietzsche right? Does nothing matter?
Was Nietzsche? I'm gonna pretend I'm spelling that right.
Nietzsche.
It'd be IE.
Oh, there you go. So, but was he right? What does nothing matter? Does nihilism rule? I don't know. I'd like to think personally. I've actually gotten into golf lately, just on a personal note, because I feel like it's a really cool game where integrity means the most. If something happens, you can't cheat. you know, and if you do cheat, that kind of tells everybody around you what they need to know about you. And if you do cheat, honestly, you rob yourself of the opportunity to get better. So, you know, it's like, what are you going to do? So give yourself a whole bunch of drop shots, give yourself a whole bunch of mulligans. Mm-hmm. It's just like, it, no one's out there to police you. So you police yourself. I don't trust a soul on that team in their accounting department to police themselves.
No. If this isn't a harsh punishment, I just have to question what it was all for.
Completely agree.
That's the end of the day. So what else we got? Oh, the USGP is coming up this weekend down in Austin, Tejas. I just wanted to point out, by the way, that Singapore into Suzuka into the USGP into Mexico into Brazil. With all due respect to the European League, I think that's my favorite stretch on the calendar year after year is.
I'd agree. I love that it ends with Brazil. I think Brazil is definitely one of my top five favorite circuits.
I think it's my second favorite circuit.
It's a fabulous track. It's a shame that in Sao Paulo everybody gets robbed, but but it's a very cool track. God bless Ayrton Senna for the S's and the inspiration and the passion from the Brazilian fans.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I'm excited for that race to see what happens. I think Sergio Perez is going to have a good run here.
Yeah,
I think he'll be completely unbridled, and Max is going to be keeping his powder dry because why would he bother? I think it'll be interesting.
Gunther Steiner made headlines here. This is our last little one. I marked it down as
optional,
but you know, we got a couple of minutes here. Gunther Steiner in his headline said that honestly, three U.S. races isn't enough, and I'm gonna slightly disagree. Here, and I've been, Tim, I think you have too, been a proponent of the three U.S. race system.
East
Coast, West Coast, Central. And to be honest, as two guys living in the Central United States, we're lucky we have one on our time zone. To be honest,
it is very nice.
Could the U.S. support four races?
So
yeah,
they could. At the prices that they're charging, absolutely not. You know, I don't know of any other like major, because I mean, you go up the East Coast, you could try to go there. That to me, in my mind, is a bit of a gamble. You could try somewhere else on the West Coast, like Laguna Seca, if you wanted to modify it, or you know, any other track out that way. But you it's going to kind of get neutered by the Vegas one.
Places like Road Atlanta and Road America, they're not capable of hosting F1. You change them and you're kind of changing what makes the circuit great, A, and B. You see Road America brought up all the time. Road America's in the middle of the boonies, man. Like,
oh yeah.
Like we're talking like the TT circuit in Aida Pacific Grand Prix kind of out. It's out there for IndyCar, you know? We're talking a city that's smaller than Vegas and less relevant than Indianapolis by a mile, and it's still another hour and a half, 2 hours outside of that city.
Yeah.
They don't have the infrastructure surrounding it to do it. The only place I can see is Indianapolis, but Penske wants him back at Indy, but I don't think F1 wants to go back to Indy because there's bad blood there.
Yeah.
I don't know if it, you know. I'm okay with three. I'm all right with three. I'm not saying that three is too many or the United States, you know, should have one like every other country. Italy has two. China might get two pretty soon here. I don't know where you'd put it. And I think honestly, one on each coast and one in the middle is good.
I think so too. You know, geographically, could it work like Europe where you have a Spanish, French, British, you know, two Italian? Yeah. But I don't think the interest level is there yet. I think a slow build is what's needed.
Slow build.
You know, honestly, the other place I would consider maybe was Chicago.
Yeah, but we're gonna not say that because Chicago sucks.
Yeah, and the Outlap F1 podcast guys are hazardous to my health.
Yes, absolutely. So,
love them. Andy travels safe, sir. He is going down to Texas this weekend, he said on his social media feed. So we wish him happy and safe travels and an enjoyable weekend.
And we wish all of you an enjoyable weekend here from the Formation Lab. We will talk to you guys next week. As always, I've been Tim.
I've been Luke.
We'll see you on the morrow. And by morrow, I mean next week.
Sure, let's get, we're going to get slagged off by a break for that, but on the morrow.